When 52-year-old Fox Lake Police Lieutenant Joe Glinowitz was found dead of a gunshot wound to the chest in early September, the Chicago area community that he worked in mourned a man they called a hero. Glinowitz radioed in before his death, saying he was pursuing three armed suspects, two white and one black. His death prompted a massive manhunt for the supposed suspects, who never turned up. In the days that followed, pro-police voices took to the airwaves and blamed the Black Lives Matter movement for creating an environment where police were being targeted more often. Now, in a bizarre twist, Glinowitz's death has been ruled a suicide. The cop, who was known as G.I. Joe, was just months away from retirement, but was apparently involved in an embezzlement scandal, having allegedly siphoned off thousands of dollars from a youth program that he ran. He worried about being exposed when an audit of the program was imminent. Authorities now say his death was an elaborately staged suicide. My guest is Sean King. He's a well-known civil rights activist and a reporter with the New York Daily News who's been covering the story. Welcome to Uprising, Sean.
Hello. Good to talk to you.
Thanks so much for joining us. Well, first, when this happened, when Glinowitz, we now know, killed himself, which was in early September, what was the rhetoric that we saw coming out of Fox News, but lots of other pro-police groups as well, police unions who saw this as a huge uptick in their eyes of violence against police? Did they straight out come and blame Black Lives Matter?
Yeah, I think part of what's tragic about it is within hours of him killing himself, and he staged it to look like he had been killed, in part because it affects the way his family would receive his pension and benefits. But within hours of him being killed, people were blaming Black Lives Matter. People were asking why President Obama is waging a war on police. And this is before any investigation has taken place. And so before any facts were in, what you see is that they were already kind of abusing the situation to blame activists who had nothing to do with this whatsoever. And so when we finally find out that he was ciphering money off of a youth program, that he was actually plotting to kill somebody in his local government, and that he killed himself, it really only confirmed what we said in the beginning, like, hey, it was always wrong to blame Black Lives Matter for this, but now it just kind of blew up in their faces.
Right. He apparently texts and emails have shown that he was considering ways to kill the Fox Lake Village administrator, the woman who would have done the audit that would likely have revealed his embezzlement. And actually, Sean, I want to play for you and our listeners an excerpt of a Fox News correspondent trying to lay the blame of Glinowitz's killing at the feet of Black Lives Matter.
You know, I'll tell you, when you look at the actual numbers, now initially it may look like it's not happening as much as it did last year. It's a difference though, and the difference real quickly is this. We have a lot of this anti-police rhetoric going on across this country right now, Martha, and that is definitely playing a role in some of these shootings. Look at this shooting just down in Texas this past week of that police officer gunned down in cold blood. You can't tell me, and you'll never be able to tell me, that that wasn't the result of some of this rhetoric that's being exposed by some of these groups like Black Lives Matter. They are calling for the lynching. They are calling for the killings of police officers. And when you have an individual that's already mentally unstable, people tend to react to that kind of crap. And what we're going to continue to see are these kinds of shootings until we hear something come out of the White House and the Justice Department clearly stating that this will not be tolerated. And we haven't heard that yet, Martha, out of anybody at the Justice Department.
And that's the kind of rhetoric we heard from Fox News and other media outlets. Now, Sean King, how much does the story of Lieutenant Glinowitz actually confirm exactly what Black Lives Matter and other civil rights groups have been saying about police abuse and police abuse of authority?
Yeah, I think it does a lot. And that's a great observation. I think it does a lot to confirm what we're saying, that he was actually the fourth officer in the past 60 days who shot himself or fabricated some type of shooting or set up some type of fictitious environment in which Black Lives Matter was blamed. But not only that, this year is on pace to be the second safest year ever in the history of America, all the way back to 1900, for American police. So far, 31 officers have been killed in America. While each of those is tragic, and even the suicide is tragic, there were years in the United States where over 300 officers were killed. During the Reagan administration, on several years, almost 200 officers were shot and killed. This year, we're all the way down to 31 officers. During President Obama's administration, during these 7 years or so, it's been the safest 7 years ever on record for American police. And so it really reveals that all of this is sadly about politics. And one of the things I've been trying to tell people is that the leading cause of death for police in America is actually suicide. And more officers kill themselves, about 150 per year, than are ever shot, killed, or die of any other cause. But you don't hear any conservative leaders talking about police suicide. And sadly, this death in Fox Lake, it's another suicide in a long string of suicides in American police officers.
Hmm. Glinowitz's personnel file was released to the public. Apparently, they show that he was routinely in violation of policy. He was involved in sexual harassment claims, and yet he kept getting promoted. What does that say about how cops are treated, even within their own departments, in terms of impunity?
Yeah, it is almost impossible to fire bad police in America. And, you know, I'm covering an officer now, Bill Melendez, outside of Detroit. And he said 12 lawsuits filed against him. He was recently arrested for a brutal assault of a grandfather named Floyd Dent. But each and every lawsuit, going all the way back to the late 90s, states the same thing over and over and over again, that he was brutal, he was corrupt, that he lied, that he was racist. And now in his trial, which is going on right now outside of Detroit, even today, finally, you know, really damning evidence is coming out that things that people have been saying for 20 years about Bill Melendez are true. And the same is true in this case. And sadly, corrupt officers often go from department to department to department. They'll even move across country. And even the officer who shot and killed 12-year-old Tamir Rice in Cleveland had been fired for just gross incompetence from his previous department. And in his personnel file, his supervisor said emphatically, "I do not think these issues will ever change for him, and he should not work in law enforcement." Cleveland hired him, and less than a year later, he killed a 12-year-old boy. And so there are lots of reforms that need to happen here. And, you know, I think we just have to chip away at these reforms bit by bit.
The other aspect to the Joe Glinowitz case in Fox Lake near Chicago is that it appears as though this man might have been a rapist. He was accused of forcing a woman to have oral sex, which sounds like rape, and he was sent to sex rehab and was suspended, but not fired. Last week, there was a detailed Associated Press report about rampant rape and sexual abuse by police around the country. Shouldn't this, too, be a big part of our current debate on police violence?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that AP report really was one of the most powerful reports detailing rape and sexual assault by police all across America in almost all 50 states. Thousands of officers over, if you go back even 20 or 30 or 40 years, but at least 1,000 officers have been fired for rape and sexual assault in the past 10 years alone. And yet somehow police are still able to keep a rather sterling reputation in the eyes of many Americans. And sexual assault is not taken seriously across the spectrum. But the idea that police abusing their power could sexually assault men and women, actually, in some cases, and get away with it is just horrific. And to me, really echoes the Catholic Church abuse scandal, where people just didn't know how to properly report them, because those who were doing the abuse were so revered across the country.
Right. I mean, if a police policeman rapes you, who do you call? I mean, the other part of the problem is that police protect one another. Just as Joe Glinowitz's sordid career details didn't come to light until they were studied by authorities and revealed how, you know, we basically have this wall of silence. People refer to it as a blue wall of silence. Even the cops who aren't corrupt protect the ones who are corrupt, which taints them too.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a anybody would tell you, even good police will tell you, that it's a closed network. Police departments are fiercely loyal to one another and go to great lengths to protect each other. And there are times where they may feel like that's what keeps them strong. But in the cases of corruption and abuse, it's toxic. And I still believe that there is a way to reform policing in America, but it's gonna require a new level of oversight that doesn't put police, and this is strange, doesn't put them in charge of investigating each other. And I think what we're seeing here is that they're just not capable, and they're not able to honestly and sincerely take each other's faults seriously.
I also finally want to talk about how the media plays into protecting the sterling reputation of police. Recently, I understand you were invited by CNN's Don Lemon to discuss this very story that we're talking about, and you turned him down. I appreciate you accepting our request, by the way. Why did you turn down Don Lemon? I also understand that your Twitter account was temporarily blocked, possibly because of that.
Well, you know, a couple months ago, my story and my racial background and history was a national story in America. And I was incredibly frustrated and offended at the way Don Lemon told that story. And even though I provided so many people who've known me my entire life, who knew my story my entire life, he really chose to tell lies and spread lies that people just completely manufactured. And so I was shocked when they reached out to me and said, hey, do you want to appear on air with Don Lemon? Because respectable journalists across the country called him out on how he handled my story. And so I just wrote back a simple email just telling them, like, hey, I would never appear on air with Don Lemon. And that I probably would never appear on CNN over this because of the way they handled it. For days on end, they said this over and over and over again. And so I took a screenshot of my exchange with the producer and posted it, and didn't think twice about it. I went to get my haircut, and while I was getting my haircut, I tried to check my tweets and my account. I've been on Twitter since 2007. My account's never been suspended, and my account was suspended. And basically, when I tried to log into Twitter, it said, hey, if you don't delete this tweet, you can't access it. And at first, my thought was that it was just CNN, like in a power move. But when I took the screenshot, it had the producer who sent me the email, and she was never like the focus of my frustration. It was more about Don Lemon. It had some of her personal contact information in there. And I think that had more to do with it than anything else. And my intention was never to, like, if that frightened her, scared her, you know, I regret that it caused her any heartache whatsoever. And so I don't know if nobody ever said if that was it, but I think that definitely played a part in it. And so I deleted it. But I think for me, the greater story was just the tone deaf nature of somebody in the media kind of doing a terrible treatment of someone's personal story and then pretending like it never happened. And so that's that.
Well, I didn't want to dignify that story by asking you about it point blank, but I do appreciate you bringing it up. And of course, people can read it, read about it online and read your work. Where's the best place? Is Twitter the best place to follow your work? Locked out of Twitter, is there another place?
If you, my name, Sean King, S-H-A-U-N-K-I-N-G. I'm at Twitter, at Sean King, Facebook, the same name, Instagram, the same name. And I don't think that'll happen on Twitter again. I think for me, the lesson was, even when you're frustrated, don't respond with like a knee-jerk reaction. And that's some of what I did there. I was just so frustrated at how it all went down.
Well, Sean, I appreciate your analysis and your work. Thank you so much for spending this time with us.
Yeah, thank you. Take care.
Sean King is a reporter with the New York Daily News and a civil rights activist. You can follow him on Twitter and Facebook. And